Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be looking into the Word together this morning. Just want you to know my wife is back, my daughter's back, and all in the world is good. Absolutely everything is fine. The ladies, I know some of them are in bed still. They've had a great trip. They're very tired because of not just the time change, but just the ministry, and we'll hear from them in the next few weeks about what took place. And for those of you who bless me with food or money for food, thank you so much. I do feel a little bit heavier than I did last Sunday, and I appreciate your involvement in my life. Today we begin a brand new series called Christians in Conflict, and I was just saying to Pastor Adam before the service, I'm so looking forward to this. It's one of those sermon series that is incredibly practical, and I pray that God will speak to you as we go through it. About a year ago, most of you will remember that we had something incredibly terrible take place here in Ottawa, the shooting on Parliament Hill. And that day, I don't know where you were at or what was going on in your mind, but there was a lot of chaos in Ottawa. The schools were on lockdown, and the news was going crazy, and people didn't really know what was going on. For most of us in Ottawa, though, we felt, I don't know about you, but I felt pretty safe being here at 1825 St. Joseph. But not everybody else in the world understood what was taking place in Ottawa, how close it was, or the dynamics of our city. One of those individuals was my sister, and I get this text from my sister that day, and she said, "Jeff, I've just watched the news. I've heard about the shooting. Are you okay? Is the family okay?" Now, friends, I know that she was trying to be nice, but this is my sister, and I don't know what kind of relationship you have with your siblings, but sometimes you interpret things the way that they shouldn't be interpreted. Here's this person trying to be nice, but immediately I thought to myself, how do I respond to that? Am I okay? If I'm not okay, am I even able to respond? And I started to process, I thought, does she think that the shooting on the hill came all the way over to St. Joseph's Boulevard, 1825? Does she think it moved into Orleans? And so my mind starts getting critical. And I know this is incredibly foolish, and you'll be very disappointed with your pastor and how he replied, but I just couldn't resist, and this is the kind of relationship my sister and I have. So to her text, "Are you and the family okay?" I said, "No, we're not okay. We're all dead." I know. Then I quickly responded back. I said, "Yes, we're okay. Everything's fine." And so I thought, I better call her, or else we're going to go into World War II or World War III, right? So I called her a short while later. I said, "Hey, Michelle, how's it going? Jeff, are you and the kids okay?" "No, Michelle, we're dead." I said, "Michelle, of course we're okay." I said "The hill is 15 minutes from where we live." I said it's like you, where you're living, if there was a shooting in Ajax, I said, you would be completely fine and have no impact upon you personally. "Well, Jeff, I just wanted to know." And she gets this real attitude on the phone. And I said, "Yeah, I know." And she says, "I have a right to ask if my brother and his family are okay." Well, I got to tell you, my back starts getting up. You know, this nice, sincere little comment, now my back starts getting up, and I says, "Yeah, Michelle, I know you have a right. I'm just telling you that the distance between the hill and where we live is such a far distance that you don't need to be worried about us." "Well, I am worried. I'm your sister. I have a right to be worried." "Yes, Michelle, I know that you have a right to be worried, but I'm just trying to calm you down and let you know that everything's fine, and that if you hear of anything taking place on Parliament Hill, you don't need to be worried." And we start going at it. I mean, we are arguing on the phone, and then at one point, she says this line. She says, "Well, Jeff, the least you could do is say, Michelle, thanks for showing concern." That's not the line I wanted to hear. It's not the line, because she confronted something about who I am and what I was contributing to the conflict that we had at that moment. I don't know about you, but most times when I'm in a conflict with somebody, I am constantly looking through the window at what the other person's problem is. Oh, that person's got a wicked attitude. Oh my goodness, why does that person think like that? They need to have a mental shift. Oh my goodness, that person causes more problems for this place. That person has more issues in their life. If that person would just listen to how they sound. And I keep pointing out at the other person's issues. How many of you do that? Oh, you liars. Whenever there's a conflict, our tendency is to point, look out the window at the person we're in conflict with and point out everything that's wrong with them. The moment my sister said that, I'd been pointing out the window at what was wrong with her, and she said, "Jeff, the least you could do is say, thanks for caring." It was a moment where I had to turn and look into the mirror and say to myself, "Self, what am I contributing to this conflict? What am I contributing to this conflict?" You see, friends, it's so easy for us to point the fingers at somebody else. But before we ever resolve conflict, we must go to the mirror. We must look in the mirror to see what it is that we are bringing to the conflicts that we find ourselves in. Look at this passage in Luke chapter 6. Jesus says to the crowd, "Hey, how can you think of saying, friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, and then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye." Luke chapter 6, verse 42. We get into a conflict and we see these specks in people's eyes, this little problem that they bring to the situation, the way they said it, the words they've chosen, the attitude with which they've communicated, these specks in their eye. And Jesus says, "Why don't you look in the mirror, because you don't know that there's this log in your eye. There's this log in your own eye. You've got something in your eye. It's sticking out. And you're thinking that that little speck is so problematic, and you're walking around with this big log in your eye." He says, you need to check out what's wrong with your life. What's wrong with what you're bringing to the situation. And friends, this morning I want to suggest that in every conflict that we find ourselves in, before we ever go to the window to look at the speck in somebody else's eye, that we need to go to the mirror and see what logs are in our eye. We need to do a self-examination. So I want to talk to you about three logs that you might find in your eye. Three logs that you might find in your eye. The first log is this: I want. I want. Look at this, James chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. And when you ask, you don't receive, because you ask with the wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures." What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires? He uses these two words, fights and quarrels, and these are strong words, friends. They're much stronger than we read in the passage. They're actually words that are used in that time for national warfare. He's not just talking about like a little fight, like a little spat with somebody, a little quarrel with your neighbor, a little quarrel with your spouse, a little quarrel with your kids. He's talking about national warfare. I mean, calling the troops. This has gotten out of control. He says, "What causes this? What causes this, church?" And he's speaking to the dispersed church from Jerusalem that's all over the place. He says, "I'm hearing about all kinds of national warfare in these churches, all these conflicts that are taking place." And he goes on, he says, "It starts off because of our desires." And the word that's used there is this Greek word hedonon, and it means pleasures. It's where we get the word hedonism from. And what he's saying is that what starts these kind of national warfares within our relationships is when we place our self-pleasures as the highest authority in our lives. Where all we're concerned about is what we want. I want this. I want this. I want this. And he goes on and he says, this kind of log in our eye, this I want log, this self-pleasure log, is so bad that sometimes it even causes killing. And I read some commentaries and they said, well, they probably didn't physically, you know, this is the church, Christians, they're probably not physical killing, but they're probably referring to Matthew chapter 5, verse 21 to 22, where Jesus says, if you even have hatred in your heart towards somebody else, it's the same as murder. He says, and then you covet this pleasure, I want, I want, I want. I don't know how many of you have kids, but those of you who have kids, when they were really small and their playmate came over, I don't know if you remember, but when the kids were really small and they were left alone to their own devices to play, eventually at one of these play dates, there would be some loud commotion wherever these two kids were. And then one would be screaming, and then somebody would be crying, and then somebody would be in the corner having a pout on their face, standing there like this. And you go and you say, what's wrong? And there, you begin to hear that the two are fighting over a toy. He took my toy. I want that toy. I want that toy. No, I want that toy. No, I want that toy. And these two best friends, these two little kids, they would be arguing about a toy and they would sever their relationship because they both wanted the same thing. And you're sitting there going, well, I'm an adult. I don't act like that. I would never be so childish. You got a free night with your spouse, living this busy life. And so finally you decide this one night is free. You're going to have a nice night at home. And so you sit down and you have this wonderful dinner and you have no distractions and you begin to talk and reconnect and everything seems to be going good. You might even light candles, guys. You might even make it a little bit romantic and light the candles. And everything's going good, and then the meal's finished, and you're thinking about what you want to do, and you know that you're so tired from the busy life you've been living that you decide that you're not going to go out, but you'll just sit down and watch something together. And so the two of you sit in this great relationship atmosphere. You sit on the couch. I keep saying Chesterfield because I'm a newfie. The couch. You sit on the couch, and you sit there, and you're about to watch TV, and you both reach for the remote. Oh, and then it begins. What are we going to watch? And the husband says, well, my team's on tonight. I want to watch sports. And the wife all of a sudden has this disgusted look on her face like you've just committed the worst treason. And she says, I don't want to watch sports. And he says, what do you want to watch? I want to watch a movie. But this is my team. But I don't like your team. I don't like your sports. I want to watch a movie. This should be about the two of us. And this wonderful relationship has now got a little bit complicated. The wonderful night has got a little bit of tension there. And you go back and forth. And finally, the husband thinks, okay, she's got a point. The sports only serves me. It doesn't serve the two of us. But a movie's more likely to serve the two of us. And so the husband thinks he's going to take the higher road. And he goes, okay, we'll watch a movie. What movie should we watch? And the discussion begins, and the husband says, I like to watch a sports movie. The wife's like, I'm not watching a sports movie. I hate sports. You love sports. I hate sports. What do you want to watch? And she describes some love story movie. One of these love stories where against all odds, the couple falls in love. And then one of them has some terminal disease, and they got to get through that situation, and eventually one of them dies at the end, and everybody's crying, and you feel absolutely depressed. She wants to watch that. And the husband's thinking to himself, that's the last thing I want to do. I'd rather have the terminal disease than watch that type of movie. I mean, he's just so, and he's, I'm not watching that. I hate those movies. They make me so depressed. And the two of them begin to fight over it. And I want to watch the sports movie. I want to watch the love story. I want to watch the sport, and back and forth and back and forth. And then all of a sudden the wife says, you never want to do what I want to do. And then the husband says, you never want to do what I want to do. I want to do this tonight. Well, I want to do this. And now this romantic night has got escalated in tension and stress. And there's so much fuming coming from their faces. Their faces are red. And what's supposed to be a great night now, the two of them are at it and they're yelling at each other. And it hits this point where the wife goes, fine, if that's what you want, you watch your little sports movie. And she goes to her bedroom and she cries herself to sleep as the husband sits smugly in his chair watching the sports that he wanted to watch in the first place. I want. And James says to the church, that's the type of thing that starts quarrels. That's the type of thing that starts fights. It's when we place our preferences above somebody else. It's when what we prefer to do overrides the other person. We get into a situation and we place the things that we prefer over what the other person prefers. I've seen this in churches. I did a little reading this week just to find out about church conflict. I don't think we have many major conflicts. Maybe we do, and I'm just so naive to them. But we seem to be in a pretty healthy place in this church. But some churches, they've split over a piano bench or no piano bench. A church actually split because they should we have a piano bench? One group said, yes, we should. One group says, no, we shouldn't. They fought over that. Another church, they got into a big, major fight in the church because of the spelling of hallelujah. One group believed it needed to be spelt this way. Another group believed it needed to be spelt that way. It was like this was going to, the proper spelling of hallelujah was going to determine whether or not they would get to heaven. One church split over the pronunciation of a Hebrew word. Churches that have split over the color of a carpet. One group felt it should be this color. Another group felt it should be that. Churches have split over styles of music. I mean, all these things that have nothing to do with the kingdom of God. It's one preference over the other. I read a story about a Presbyterian church in Centerville, Georgia. The population of this community was only 5,000 people. 1911, a conflict begins to happen. And the conflict is over whether or not the offering should take place before the sermon or after the sermon. One group of people said, we prefer that the offering takes place before the sermon. Another group says, no, we want the offering to take place after the sermon. We feel the pastor will prepare the hearts of people. We feel that we need to respond to the pastor's message, and we shouldn't have the offering. Back and forth, preference over another preference. And so the church splits. The new church becomes Centerville Reformed Church. 4 years later, another split takes place, this time over the use of flowers within the sanctuary. One group thought that the church should have flowers in the sanctuary. Another group felt that it shouldn't. And so they split, and the new church became Trinity Reformed Presbyterian Church of Centerville. Then between the years of 1915 and 1929, seven more church splits took place. The last church that came out of this very healthy congregation of all these splits was this. Third Westminster Trinity Covenant Presbyterian Reformed Church of Centerville. I mean, they had to make it so long because all the other congregations had the simpler names. Church after church who were fighting over their preferences. I don't want to be a church that fights over preferences. I want to be a church that is passionate about the things that matter most to Jesus. I want to be a church that really focuses on kingdom things, not about our opinions or our pleasures or the things we want, but really about the things that Jesus wants. That's the stuff that should consume our hearts, not none of the preference stuff. That's the kind of church I want to be. So you say, Pastor, so what do I do when I look in the mirror and I see this log of I want? Look at this verse in Romans. Romans chapter 12, verse 10. Do we have that verse there? Romans 12, 10. Says this, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Let's just keep that there for a second. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. In one version, the Bible puts it this way, but outdo one another in showing love. And then another version says, give preference to one another. Let me tell you what you should do when you're in a conflict. When you're in a conflict with somebody else, you should say this, do I love this person enough that I'm willing to show them preference? Do I love this person enough that I'm willing to lay down my wants for this individual? Do I love them like Christ loves me? That I'm willing to outdo them. I'm willing to put their preference over my preference. You see, friends, many of the conflicts you find yourself in are simply conflicts about what you want. They're about your preferences. Let us be a church that not just as a congregation, but out there in the world with our families and our workplaces and in our community, that we are constantly putting the preferences of other people ahead of our own preferences. Let us truly outdo one another in showing love, and we will reduce the conflict in our lives. The second log that we might see in our lives is the log of I'm talking. You know that. James chapter 1, verse 19, just flip over a page, says this. My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. It's worth reading again. Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. Let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. I wrote it down this way. Anger will come slowly if I'm not quick to get a word in, but I'm eager to hear the other person. You see, many of us are so busy talking, we're so eager to get a word in, we don't hear what the other person's saying. How many husbands know what I'm talking about? How many wives have a husband who knows what I'm talking about? Oh, more hands that time. so so sometimes Ains and I will get into disagreements. And we'll be talking about something, and Ains and I are very strong personalities and very stubborn individuals, and so we have our opinions and we share it. We're straight shooters. And occasionally we don't like the opinion of the other person, so we'll start talking or something will happen, and the conversation level becomes aggressive in communication. And then Ainsley starts to give it to me. I mean, she starts to lay it down, tell me what her thoughts are of the issue, and she's staying calm but firm. Well, as she's talking, there's a lawyer in my mind, and this lawyer is crafting the next few statements that will be said. I am putting together my defense. I am putting together my closing arguments. I am eager for what's in my head to get out of my head and out of my mouth and into her ears. Because I'm convinced that what has been presented in my head, if she can just hear it, it will cause her to repent. It will cause her to say, I'm sorry, and the conflict will be done, and life will be once again wonderful. And so she is communicating, and she is sharing her message, and at some point, when she comes to the end of that conversation, but many times before she comes to the end of what she wants to share, the lawyer starts to speak. And I begin to talk, and I begin to say, oh yeah, well, let me tell you something. And she just looks at me, and she'll start to say something, and then all of a sudden the lawyer comes out again. And I begin to put together my speech. And she's talking, and I can kind of hear her in the back. I'm putting it together. And before she's even done, oh, yeah, well, let me tell you something. And then she'll say this. Are you even listening to what I have to say? And I look at her. Of course I'm listening. I'm a pastor. It's my gifting. Of course I'm listening. You're saying it so loud. How could I not be listening? And then she says this. Then repeat back to me what I just said. Well, you told me you were angry. And in that moment, I realized that I'm so busy wanting to talk that I'm really not listening. Oh, I'm hearing, but I'm not listening. And friends, communication is so delicate in our lives that if we fail to listen because all we're doing is talking, even if it's not with this, but it's with this, I guarantee you, you're going to have conflict. Spouses, some of you fight constantly, not because you have issues, but because you keep talking instead of listening. Some of you fight with your kids because you're not listening, you're talking. Some of you fight with your parents because you're talking instead of listening. Some of you fight with the neighbors, with the people at work, because all you do is you pull the lawyer out and you start to speak instead of listening. And James says to us that we are to be slow to speak and quick to listen. Slow to speak, quick to listen. You see, when we seek to talk, when we keep wanting to talk, our desire is that we will be understood. But we're not seeking to understand the other person's perspective. And many times in our conflicts, we're missing something significant because we're so desirous to be understood that we're not actually coming to a place of understanding of the other person. Perhaps you heard the story. A man was walking with his donkey and his dog down a road. And all of a sudden, this wild driver comes by in a truck and comes around the bend, slides on the gravel, and hits this man, the donkey, and the dog. And so they're on the side of the road, and the driver comes over to see how everything is. And everything seems to be fine for the most part. But a few weeks later, the man realizes that he's got some serious problems, and he wants to be reimbursed for what's just taken place. He wants this guy to pay him back. So they go to court. And now the old man's on top of the witness stand, and the defense lawyer comes over and says, sir, I want to ask you a question. He says, did you or did you not say that you were fine the day that this happened? The old man looks at him and says, well, my donkey and my dog and I were going for a walk this one day, And all of a sudden, the lawyer cuts him off and says, I asked you a question. I asked you something specific. I want you to answer. Did you or did you not say you were fine that day? He says, well, my donkey and my dog and I were walking this one day, and all of a sudden the lawyer gets really angry. He says, I asked you a question. We need to know the facts here. He starts getting passionate in the courtroom. He says, we need to know. You said that you were fine. Did you or did you not say that you were fine? And once again, the old man says, well, my donkey and my dog and I were going for a walk this one day. The lawyer throws his hands up and he's so upset. He says, judge, come on. I'm trying to understand what's going on here. And this man refuses to answer the question. And the judge looks at the defense lawyer and he says, well, listen, sir, this old man seems to have something important to say, so why don't we let him finish his story? Let's listen to what he has to say. The old man says, well, my dog and my donkey and I were going for a walk this one day, and we were going around the corner, and this truck that was driving so quickly comes around the bend. He's driving much faster than he should have, and the truck slid on the gravel and hit us, and so my dog and donkey and I went flying off into the ditch. I could hear where I was laying that the driver was very concerned, and he came over to the donkey, and he saw that the donkey had a broken leg and was in terrible condition. And so the man went back to his truck and got the shotgun, and he came over and he shot my donkey. Then he went over to the dog, and he saw that the dog was in terrible shape, and so he shot my dog. So then he came over to me, and I saw the shotgun, and when he said, how are you? I said, I'm fine. So eager to say something that we're not even listening to the full story. The story from the other person gives perspective, it gives understanding, it helps us to know what's going on. We've got to be willing to listen. I remember I shared this one time. I was counseling at youth camp when I was 18, and there was this hard, fast rule that guys could not go into girls' cabins and girls couldn't go into guys' cabins. Very last day of camp, It's the Sunday afternoon, I come around, my cabin's just over to the side, and the door's open, and I can hear voices from the cabin. And I can hear a female voice in a guy's cabin, my guy's cabin. They knew the rules. My anger level went straight up. I was ready for conflict. You know me, I'm not usually one to shy away. I'm ready to go for it. So I start to walk. I start to think about what's going on. I think I'm gonna tell this kid off. I'm gonna tell whoever it is in my cabin that he knows better. That he broke the rules. That he should have understood that anything could happen. Does he not know the temptation that he could have been in? Does he not know what could have happened? Does he not know about the appearance of evil? I'm getting ready. I've got this speech ready in my head. And as I walk through the door, I see this girl sitting on the bunk bed and this guy from my group. And I want so bad to talk. I want so bad to be heard. I want him to understand what's in my mind. I want him to understand how badly he has broken the rules. And some little nudge inside of me says, don't be so quick to speak. Perhaps you need to understand. Perhaps you need to be slow to speak and quick to listen. And so I walked in and I said, hey, who's this? What's going on? He said, hey, Jeff, this is my sister. She's here to help me pack my stuff and take it out to the car. I was so thankful that I didn't go in there talking about the appearance of evil, about what could have happened. I'm so glad that I didn't shoot my mouth off with the lawyer's defense, because as I walked in, I saw something that I didn't understand. I didn't understand up to that point. And friends, I just want to tell you that many times you're in conflict because you're constantly speaking and never taking a chance to listen to what the other person has to say. You're very quick. I'm very quick. We're all very quick to talk. We all want to be understood. But if we want to reduce the conflict in our lives, we've got to look into the mirror and say, is there a law called I'm talking? Should there not be something of me that says I'm listening? I'm listening. I want to hear what you have to say. And not just hearing the words, but able to say back, okay, let me tell you what I think you said. Speaking it back. We've got to be willing to listen. Thirdly, not only is it I want and I'm talking, but the third log that we'll find in our eye is I know. I know. Look at this, Proverbs chapter 13, verse 10. You'll see it up on the screen. Proverbs 13, Solomon says, Pride only leads to arguments, but those who take advice are wise. I would say that the greatest reason why we find ourselves in conflict is because of pride. Because of our own arrogancy, because of our own pride, because of something that we feel about ourselves that is better than the other individual. And Solomon reminds us that every time we see the log of pride, I know that we are guaranteed to have arguments. So when do we use this phrase, I know? Well, first of all, we say, I know better than you. I know better than you. I mean, this is the classic one of we say with our kids, right? The reason why you're not, because I know better. I'm the parent. When you've had this much life's experience, you would know better. I know better than you in this. I know better than you in this. And there are moments we find ourselves in conflicts, and we're arguing because in our minds, we truly believe that we have better understanding. We truly believe we have more knowledge. We truly believe that we know better than the other individual. My dad told me a story a number of years ago about him and his brothers, and they've gone to a restaurant one morning after they were hunting, and they've gone for breakfast. So they sit down and they order their breakfast, and they're all sitting and talking. They're tired, you know. They're probably a little cranky because they haven't had great sleep as they've been hunting and not staying in the best accommodations. And this sweet waitress comes and she begins to place the meals down one by one. And everybody seems to be happy, but my one uncle, I won't mention which one, just in case he ever watches. But my one uncle looks at his plate, and conflict starts to come over him. Tension comes over him. Stress. His blood begins to rush through his neck and into his face. And all of a sudden, the conflict moment happens, and he says, this is wrong. The lady says, I'm sorry, sir, what's wrong? This is all wrong. I can't eat this. I can't eat this. Sir, I'm sorry. You did this wrong. You prepared my food wrong. Sir, and she goes through the order. I gave you the eggs and the bacon and the hash browns and everything. And I don't understand. I think I've done everything wrong. No, you don't know. You've done this wrong. He says, normally, my eggs sit on this part of my plate. My toast sits on this part of the plate. My hash browns sit on this part of the plate. And my bacon sits on this part of the plate. And he begins to get very particular because what has been presented to him in his mind is the wrong way of doing things. He knows better than this girl. And he's creating a scene in the restaurant. This sweet girl looks at him and goes, I'm so sorry, sir. And she takes his plate and turns it around and goes, is that better? You see, there are times that we think we know better, but our perspective is so jaded. You see, we have so many blind spots in our lives. And friends, sometimes we get into these conflicts and we are convinced. Nobody wants to truly believe that they're wrong in a conflict. Like if we can just be in agreement about one thing, not one person in this room is going through life going, I wish for my whole life that every argument I'm wrong. That's my goal. No, we want to be right. And we believe that we know better than the other individual, and so conflict arises. The second thing that we might say is not only do I know better, but I know your motives. I know your motives. Look at this passage. Sometime after this, King Nahasha of the Ammonites died, and his son Hanan became king. David said, I'm going to show loyalty to Hanan, just as his father, Nahash, was always loyal to me. So David sent ambassadors to express sympathy to Hanan about his father's death. Now just hold it there for a second before, just go back for one slide. The act here, friends, in David's heart is a pure act. It's a pure motive. He's trying to show kindness. There is nothing evil about it. He's reaching out. Now the next verse. But when David's ambassadors arrived in the land of Ammon, the Ammonite commanders said to Hanan, their master, do you really think these men are coming here to honor your father? No, David has sent them to spy out the city so they can come in and conquer it. So Hanan seized David's ambassadors, shaved off half of each man's beard, and cut their robes at the buttocks and sent them back to David in shame. 2 Samuel 10, 3-4. Please don't imagine this in your mind. An act of kindness. Genuinely pure heart. And the recipient of this act of kindness begins to assume that he knows the motives of David. I know the motives of David. I know he's trying to bring harm to our country. I know what's really in his heart. I know this man's conquered somebody else, other nations, and he is going to conquer us. And his response to the situation comes from a sense of pride by assuming he knows the motives of David. And as a result, shaves off half his beard and creates a little window in the back of these guys' garments. Embarrasses them tremendously. I mean, for a Jewish man to have half his beard, for his beard to be shaven at all, to expose himself, incredible humility. Kindness responded to by humiliation. Because somebody thinks they know the motives of somebody else. The result? A war. A physical war. Not an argument. Not a little spat. Not a little fight. I mean war. Death. People's lives are given for this because somebody assumed that they knew the motives of somebody else. And many times in our fights and our conflicts, we're looking at somebody else and we say, I know what they're really saying. I know what's going on in their minds. I know why they did that. I know what their motives are. I know what's going on in their hearts. Friends, let me tell you something. You might sometimes, but most of the time you don't. Because the truth is that the people around you, just look to the person on your left for a second. Just look to the person on your right. And just do a quick look behind you. In this congregation, there are not very many evil people. There are not people who are going out to destroy your life. You see, most of us, the majority of us, 99.9999999% of us have really pure hearts. Sometimes we may not communicate right. Sometimes we may not realize how we are being perceived. Sometimes we may do an action that's very selfish because we're broken people. But the majority of us don't have these deep evil desires inside of us, these deep evil motives inside of us to offend people. Sometimes we'll be sitting as a staff and someone will tell me about a conflict. And I'll say, what do you think is the issue? Because that person's not an evil person. Well, what do you think the problem is? Because that person is not inherently evil. They're not trying to cause problems. There's something beyond that. And friends, if we keep assuming that we know the motives of each other's hearts, we will always, always be in conflict. Would you assume the best of people around you? Would you assume the best of your spouse? Would you assume the best of your congregation, the people in this congregation? Would you assume the best of me as I try to assume the best of you? Would you assume the best of people at your work? Would you assume the best of your kids and your spouse? Would you assume the best? I know your motives. And lastly, not only do I know better, not only do I know your motives, but I know how to handle this. I know how to handle this. We find ourselves in conflicts. And rather than seeking the advice of somebody else, we arrogantly go, I know, I'm good. I don't need advice on this one. I can deal with this one myself. And rather than getting some genuine input, I'm not talking about gossip so you can tell the whole story, get somebody on your side. I'm talking about genuine input where people can look into your life to see what's wrong. I was in a situation last year. And I was away from the church, and this conflict arose, and I was very, very frustrated. And I was communicating back and forth through email. And I was with one of my buddies, and I said to my buddy, I said, hey, what do you think about this? And I began to read him the email, and he said, I said, am I wrong here? And he goes, no, I'm with you on this one, fellow pastor. And so as the days would go by, I kept on fueling the conflict. Email after email after email. Am I wrong on this? No, you're right. And I really felt like I was dealing, I thought, man, I'm being wise. I'm handling this so well. And finally, after a few days where my stress level kept on rising, I turned to my buddy. I said, Dave, is there anything in this situation that I'm not handling properly? Could you just speak into me? Could you just tell me, is there a blind spot that I have? Could you help me to see what I'm doing wrong? And he said, Jeff, I agree with you principally. You are absolutely right on this issue. He says, but if I were you, this is what I would do. He says, you keep emailing, stop emailing and get on the phone. Oh, well, that's good. The moment I got on the phone, all of a sudden the stress level started to come down. All of a sudden the conflict started to come down. All of a sudden the situation started to get handled properly because I needed someone to speak into my life. And there are times when we're in conflict where we assume that we know better, we know how to handle the situation. And Solomon says that the wise person seeks the advice of somebody else. Some of us need to have somebody in our lives who we trust, who will identify the blind spots, so that when we are in conflict, we can ask them, am I handling this properly? Am I dealing with this properly? And you need to be prepared to hear, no, you're not, and then act upon it. You see, we need to keep asking, am I wrong to somebody else? Then we need to say, am I judging this person? Am I judging their motives? And am I handling this wrong? I got these logs in my eyes. These things I keep bringing to the conflict. And I need to stop. I need to stop going to the window and pointing out everybody else's faults, friends. Jeff Hillier, before I ever preach this to you, I got to stop looking out the window at what everybody else's fault is in the conflicts, the situations. Whether it's with my kids, whether it's with my spouse, whether it's with my staff, whether it's with the church, whether it's with people in my neighborhood. I need to put away the window and I need to go to the mirror and say, God, is there something wrong with me? Is there something I'm contributing to this? I know I'm talking. And the first one, I'm forgetting the first one. I got so much in my head. I know I'm talking. You see, whenever you hear those words, whenever those things are going through your mind, friends, most likely you need to look in the mirror and say, I'm contributing to this. Last story, and I'm going to ask Pastor Steve and Jess just to come back and begin to play softly. A number of years ago, probably 5 years ago, I think I've shared this, I had two conflicts in my life that I needed to resolve. One of the conflicts was with somebody I'd worked with, and we had a close relationship, and as at one point, things got really bad. This individual had moved on, and we had very infrequent conversations. And they weren't that nice, those infrequent conversations. And I had a reason for why this gap was there in our relationship. And I kept having these dreams that I was going to meet this individual and that we were going to have a blowout, or that I'd see this person and I'd try to avoid them. You know there's something that needs to be fixed when you want to avoid somebody. Just by the way, if you're in the foyer and there's somebody you want to avoid, then you need to go get it fixed. Just a little PS. And so I decided that I needed to get this fixed, and so I went and had lunch with this individual. I really felt that my olive branch was going to rectify the situation. But as I got there, I got the biggest earful that I had ever had from anybody. This individual began to tell me everything that I had done wrong. I mean, his window was huge. He pointed everything out to me. You did this wrong, you did this wrong, you did this wrong, you did this wrong, you did this wrong. And I sat there and it kept piling on my shoulders. You did this, you did this, you did this. And I got to tell you, I wanted, as soon as he was done, and even before he was done, I wanted to pull out the window and start to tell him, well, I want to tell you what you did. I want to tell you what you did. I want to tell you what you did wrong in this situation. Something inside of me just kind of checked my heart, and I found myself mentally going to the mirror, saying, what can I own of this? What's the log in my eye? And while I wanted to point the finger in that next moment when he finally stopped berating me with his words, I said, I want to tell you from the depths of my heart, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. Now, I had reasons for everything that he had accused me of. I had legitimate reasons. We talked about them later on. But I said, regardless of the things I'm going to share with you in a few moments of why we got here, that's not how a friend treats another friend. I haven't been there for you. And I want to tell you that I am genuinely sorry, and I held back the tears as I sat in that restaurant. I said, I should have been a better friend. And I'm asking you, please forgive me. Please, please forgive me. This needs to get better. I don't want to spend the rest of my life having dreams about you, sir. It's a little awkward. I said, I want us to get back to a place where we're friends. And so I'm just telling you that I'm going to take ownership for whatever I've brought to this. I'm sorry. Friends, some of you need to do that. You need to look in the mirror, and regardless of how much you want to point through the window, you need to say, God, what can I own? What logs are in my eye? Because what matters most is our relationship. Our relationship. I challenge you, live like Jesus. Live like Jesus. Be as kind and as gracious to one another. And that happens by looking in the mirror first to see what needs to be removed. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? We're about to end this service. Tonight, this morning's message is going to be so practical. It can't be responded to necessarily in an altar moment. It really needs to be responded to with your spouse, with your child, with your coworker, with your friend. It needs to be responded in a very practical way. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall inherit the kingdom or inherit the kingdom of God." And some of you have thrown away your inheritance because you've not tried to make peace. It's time to make peace. Check your heart. Is it because of what you want, your desires? Is it because of you talking? Or is it because of your pride that you think you know? And say, Jesus, I need help on these things. Help me to be better when it comes to conflict. Before we close, let me ask this one last question. You're in this place, you'd say, Pastor, I've never given my life to Jesus Christ. But there's something about this atmosphere, there's a presence here that makes me feel so warm and alive. And I want whatever it is. I'm here to tell you that what it is a person named Jesus Christ. He so loves you, he died on a cross for you, he gave his life so that you might walk with him daily and then forever spend eternity with him. If you've never given your life to Jesus, but you'd say, Pastor, I want to give my life to him today, would you just raise your hand? Is there anybody in this place? If you want to talk to somebody about that idea of giving your life to Jesus, or if you need prayer this morning, for any need in your life, there will be some people at the front, our prayer team. They'll pray for you as soon as the service is over. You simply need to come to this front area, and they'll pray for you. But congregation, as I close in prayer, I want you to reflect on what you bring to the conflict. I want you to look in the mirror and say, Jesus, help me with the things I see, the logs that might be in my eye. So Jesus, this morning as we leave this place, I pray you would show us the logs, Jesus, the logs that say, I want things that where it's our pleasures, our preferences that are causing the conflict. I pray you'd show us the log that says, I'm talking, where we keep speaking, never try and understand the other person. And Jesus, would you speak to us about pride in our life, where we keep thinking we know better than the other person, we know how to handle the situation, that we know the motives of somebody else. Help us to get rid of that pride and ask the advice of somebody else. I pray that this day, this week, as we go into our world, that we would be peacemakers. Let us be like the Prince of Peace. The Prince of Peace rules in us, and so let us bring peace to the situations around us. That we would demonstrate the value of the King, peace, wherever we may go. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Bless you, everyone.